Blog Talk Radio.
It's Monday night, and it's a brand new episode of Graphic Policy Radio, the show that mixes comics and politics. This is the one medium that the conservatives say the liberals control. Oh, wait. Lying on that one. For those who haven't said, Chuck Dixon had some words about being conservative and winning the comic book industry, and it's worth the read and kind of hilarious behind a paywall on the New York Times, Washington, something like New York Times, I think. But if you can get a hold of it, it's worth the read. It's kind of humorous because it kind of ignores history. Yeah.
Conservatives, they're really interested in ignoring history. So that doesn't surprise me. It's sort of consistent.
Yeah.
It's
when I debated of talking about this episode, but I was like, I really don't want to beat the guy. He has written some fun stuff, and he's conservative, but he's not horrible when it comes to his writing. He's actually quoted as contradicting himself in previous interviews, but whatever. Facts are facts, and one side ignores them. Yeah. As always, I am joined by Alana. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited. Back.
Yes, we took a little bit of time off, but we're back and we've got some cool stuff to discuss.
Yes, lots of good stuff coming out.
Yes, so we're going to talk a little news and then we're going to talk a little comics. So let's start with the news because that moves right into the comics, so it's a perfect conversation. DC Comics, comic industry as a whole has taken up flack for either not having enough women creators or not highlighting female characters enough. We'll be discussing some series that have awesome kick-ass female characters, and it's definitely made improvement over the years. All new Marvel now, I think, is evidence of that. One that is behind is DC Comics, who seem to always be a few steps behind everyone else and drag their feet. At a shareholders meeting, which anyone that has shares can go to, so, buy a couple stock shares of Time Warner, and you can go to these meetings as well. A person who hasn't been identified asked the following question. I would challenge you that there are simply not enough in creative control women at Warner Brothers that can develop female characters in ways that appeal to the audience. Diane Nelson, who is the head of DC Entertainment, responded, and I want to say she might be the highest placed woman in comics. I can't think of anyone in another company that's a similar position, but so she basically runs DC Entertainment. Her response was, they're very conscious of female representation, and her exact quote is, at DC Entertainment, we talk frequently about how we heighten the presence of female storytellers and creators with our comic books, digital and physical. How do we bring female characters to light? She says, we have to more work to do, but I think if we talk again in a couple of years, you'll be pleased with the results. So, yeah.
A couple of years? This is not like the lead time on like developing the Death Star, a couple of months, a couple of years? Are you crazy? That's completely preposterous. I really like the theory that Simone de Marie Sue put out, that the shareholder who asked that question was actually Bruce Wayne. Someone on the Mary Sue suggested that in the comments section, and put out a reasonable explanation that, he has to maintain his playboy asshole persona publicly, but he would likely to be a shareholder, and that is an issue that he would raise since he's someone who certainly supported the careers and successes of many female heroes and female entrepreneurs over time. So I like that theory, and I'd like to thank Bruce Wayne for speaking out.
Yeah, I haven't seen the shareholder identified anywhere, and someone said it is a man, so I'm assuming it is, but
Bruce Wayne.
Who knows? Yeah, there we go. We'll just say it's Bruce Wayne.
You know it's male, and therefore you can assume it's Bruce Wayne.
What about why can't it be Clark Kent?
He wouldn't really be a shareholder. It's just not his. He'd be there as a journalist interviewing her. He wouldn't be there as a shareholder.
I would say it's very Lois Lane, though. She is the one that would buy one share so she can show up and ask a question like that.
That's true.
And isn't Clark Kent now a blogger? Like, isn't that like something a blogger would do to get hits?
Maybe, but I don't know. I just think that it's clearly Bruce Wayne at the shareholders meeting asking the awkward questions.
That works. So what was interesting was around the same time that this came out, a rumor hit the web of DC Comics movie slate, of which Wonder Woman is slated for 2017, I believe. It's complete rumor, not confirmed. I think a good chunk of it's bullshit, but that's because they said the announcements will be at San Diego Comic-Con, and last year they said Wonder Woman and The Flash and X-Force and Cable, a whole bunch of other folks were getting movies at San Diego Comic-Con last year, and all of it turned out to be not true. So I'm sure DC's working on something. I'm not quite convinced this particular report is accurate. But I thought it was interesting that it all came out around the same time. Like, I'm putting on my conspiracy hat. Yeah, I'm putting on my conspiracy theory hat that it was released in conjunction with the shareholder meeting.
Right. Because people know, I mean, Alyssa Rosenberg has written about this a lot. A lot of people have. Like, people know that doing stuff that attracts diverse audiences is good for business. It's, like, deliberate at this point if you're not doing that, that you're just sticking your finger in the eyes of the business and social interest as well. So that could be the reason.
I also, like, I mean, she, they're clearly doing something because, I mean, one of their movies, first the focus on the movies and TV, comics is a whole other thing, is they've got iZombie coming out, which is a female-centric lead series that's kind of Veronica Mars meet Buffy, Scooby-Doo, something like that. It's the best way I can describe it. It's going to be on CW, obviously aiming for female audience. I think it'll be a broader fan base, potentially a decent-sized fan base.
Yeah.
Heard of those stories. So, you know, they're clearly doing something. You know, why they actually picked that, I can't say, but it's a good series. And
well, it's sort of in the zeitgeist.
Yeah, it's I think it adapts well to TV, and yeah, exactly. Like, it's a good move. So, you know, they're not stupid. The movies, I can understand.
Nope, not stupid, just malicious. Oh, no, I'm not really sure, actually. It's really hard to attribute motive sometimes.
Right. So, I mean, movies, I think, and my explanation would be, and it's complete conjecture and I don't know, is it took 7 years for Marvel to plan to the point to get to Iron Man. I mean, it was 7 years in the making to plan out Iron Man and Thor and Cap all up into the Avengers. That was 7 years of work. So, you know, that kind of came out of nowhere and really knew what Marvel was doing. So DC basically has been caught-footed and behind the eight ball and, you know, basically behind Marvel and was just like, oh, shit, we need to do that too. So it took 7 years, and it's only been, I don't know, when Iron Man come out, like early 2000s, something like that. And, like, it hasn't – it's been about that time for DC as well, but, like, they're behind when it came to that and caught. So it could just be the fact that they're slow and taking forever to do this.
Yeah.
A theory.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, development time for movies is like, that's long. It's just, if it's for comics, that's like, you know, come on, months. And
yes.
You know.
Now, comics is my question. So we know it takes 3 months, around 3 months to put out a comic from the point that it gets solicited and all that. We're looking at a 3 month window. The new 52
mm-hmm.
came out. DC launched, how many, it's been, what, 4 years now, 5 years now? 4 years?
Yes, yeah.
Somewhere around, about 4 years, since the New 52. A New 52 launched with, you know, what a shock, 52 books. And most of them have been flipped over. I forgot, someone did the math of how many series have been canceled. So they've had many opportunities to bring out series with women and solid series with women, and they did a couple. Katana, which was horrible.
Yeah.
katana, which is horrible.
Yep. And Birds of Prey, which was
right.
And
yeah.
Batwoman,
Batgirl, both of those
Batwoman,
are still
which
going.
They sort of disrupted from its earlier yeah. awesomeness and grace, and sort of shook up and made it like. And
yeah. Voodoo got canceled quickly.
Oh my God! Boy, did that. That was just.
It was weird. It was very weird. It did fit DC. I'm trying to think what else. Like, they've had a lot of opportunity. I mean, they've canceled and brought back series God knows how many times. You would think they would start throwing stuff out there to maybe get some more, you know, try some others. Like, comics is where I don't think they have an excuse.
Yeah, exactly. There's not. It's not like you're investing a ton of resources to try something new. It's really not. And they have, you know, I just saw something. I don't know how they're going to be doing a new Forever People series on DC. And, you know, I love Fourth World, love Jack Kirby. I'm almost willing to pick it up and see if it's good. Even though I don't buy anything from DC anymore. But it's, you know, and he seems to have noticed that they now have to even have a more diverse team. Rather than there being one female on the team, there's now two. Yay. You know, I mean, they're trying that. They're trying that. That's interesting. But if Stan Didio doing it himself, then I don't know.
So,
I mean, they're trying some different things.
Yeah, so that issue, the first issue actually came out last week.
Oh.
So it's on shelves. It's Infinity Man and the Forever People, I think. I gave it a shot. I'm not as big of a Kirby fan as you are. I actually really liked it. I thought it was well done. They tried doing a Kirby homage series when New 52 came out with OMAC, and I thought that was horrible.
Yeah, it was pretty clearly horrible. OMAC is so hard to do.
But this one I thought was really, really good. Like, it's diverse. There's, of the, like, initial team that you meet, I think it's two women and two guys. Then they meet another guy on Earth, so it's, like, five people total, two women, three guys. Two of them are they're black. I mean,
I know, they're from space. It's like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's like hard to say.
Dark skin.
They have dark skin, yeah.
So, you know, on top of that, you've got two minorities, and not everyone's white, which is even better.
Yeah.
It's good. Like, I actually really liked the first issue. I probably don't know as much as, like, you would. I don't get out of it as much as you would, as, you know, being a fan. But it's worth it. Like, I think it's worth checking out.
Okay, I'll pick it up. I'll some risk spitting in my eye another time.
Yeah, it'd also be interesting to hear what you say. Like, it's a diverse cast. So, like, it's, one, cool to see. But, two, like, it's a pretty good story. Like, maybe my expectations were really low, too.
Yeah, that can happen, too. But, yeah, so I just don't see why it would take that long to have a change in their comics content. But you know, it was great to hear and get called out of that from the shareholders meeting and get to see it pushed in the news again. And
the other is, it's the more you get it out there of, adult venues, like, you know, not just complaining, you know, bringing it up on blogs or at comic-cons, but a shareholder meeting, you know, that holds some weight. So,
yeah.
Seeing that it's cool. Like, it's a good venue to discuss these things in adult manner that will be taken seriously.
Cool.
So, yeah. So, all right. That's enough of that. We've got a whole bunch of cool stories to talk about. One that makes its debut this Wednesday. But before we get to that, let's talk about some kick-ass female comics, or at least comics with female leads. We want to talk She-Hulk, Ms. Marvel, and
Captain
Marvel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Really great stuff, guys. I really enjoyed this month's issue of She-Hulk. I've been loving the series in general, but I think this is one of the best ones yet. I'm a big fan of Ron Rumberly's art. I do know him personally, but he's not someone who I'm like BFF with, so I think I'm still allowed to review him with some amount of objectivity. I think his art is really dynamic. I loved what he did on Prince of Cats, which was like this Shakespeare, New York, Brooklyn, Tybalt, like thing that he did that was amazing. 80s. And I thought it was funny, actually, when they were doing the promotions for his guest art on this issue, I think Marvel wrote that he's the artist for Mighty Thor. It's like, yeah, but people know him from his own books, trust me. It's like, oh, the Mighty Thor. Well, in that case, this is clearly somebody who we should all know. No, people know him because his own book, actually, is a big deal. So he did the guest art on the interiors on it. And it was extra angular and extra dynamic and extra bright colors. It definitely, like, there is no way you would have seen this issue and confused it with the earlier ones. And I've loved the art throughout the series in general, don't get me wrong. It's just that this was a different flavor for it. And mm-hmm. I thought it worked really well. It was a very action-packed episode. He was a great person to have draw that fight between Tigra and, there's a fight between two lady characters, and they're both very physical characters, and he does a great job drawing it. I felt like the art, in some ways, the limbs were so elongated and pointy that it kind of reminded me of Ian Flux a bit, which is a good thing because I enjoyed that. I was a huge fan of that show back in the day. So I don't know if he's going to be like a permanent artist on the book or if this is just a temporary thing, but I really enjoyed it and I thought it was a good match for him in particular. And, I like the Shocker. Like, he, to me, is one of the more... Like, he's such a poor son of a bitch. You know what I mean? Like, he's just a fuck-up. It's hard not to feel sorry for him, you know? He's just a sad sack. And I thought he was really well used in this issue. And, you know, and that, certainly Charles Soule is not the first person, like, to portray him that way. Like, that's, like, popular portrayal, I guess, you know, of the Shocker. But I think he did a really good job manifesting it. I think he comes off, like, really real and really funny. Not like he's trying to be funny, because he's not. Like, tragic funny or whatever. I really enjoyed their interactions there. And exciting to see what's happening with her paralegal in Nebraska, who totally has powers now. Like, that's absolutely been proven that her and her monkey have powers. We feel like we learned a lot in this latest episode about the cast that we're dealing with, and I think that there was a bit of a reveal in terms of, like, what is the Blue File about. I had thought, actually, that the Blue File was going to end up being, like, almost like a MacGuffin that they would keep dragging out throughout the series, but now I'm actually beginning to wonder if maybe they will tackle it and resolve it. I don't know. I don't really know if I care about whether it's a MacGuffin or if it's a real thing, but I was a bit surprised to see him actually decide to take it on in the series. I don't know. Well, I mean, what do you think?
The Blue File, is that from anywhere else, or that just, like, randomly pop up? I'm not sure on that, because I didn't think so.
It was invented for the series. This is something he invented for the series.
All right, good to go on that one. I'm pretty sure I'm not missing anything, but I just want to be sure. So the change in art, normal artist or the art of the first three issues or four issues was, Javier Pulido. It's just different stuff. So going into this issue, and I didn't know it was a different artist, kind of caught me off guard. Different style, kind of cool. I think I might dig Javier Pulido's a little bit more. But it's still, like, you know, again, what we've been saying about All New Marvel now for quite a while now is it's giving different artists a try, and mixing things up. It's not the standard, you know, house style. They're willing to try new things. So seeing that, I think, is really, really cool. I love with the her assistant, who with Monkey, like, we all knew something was up, but now, you know, she has some sort of powers, but it's never met. Like, we learn it through the story. It's not like this very clear reveal type of thing, where it's just stated. It's feels natural as part of the story.
In a really cool way.
Yeah, and I think everything about the issue feels really, really natural. Like, so the writer, Charles Soule, is a lawyer himself, so it's clear, like, he's putting in his knowledge of that world and that business, like, to the comic and really mixing it well with the superhero aspect. Like, to me, this is just a fantastic comic that you can hand to, like, any non-comic reader, and they probably dig it. Maybe not this particular issue, but the series as a whole. But even maybe this issue itself is like it's good. Like, you can pick this up and probably enjoy it. Especially with the Shocker part. Like, I thought the Shocker part was hilarious. And I don't think you're reading Superior Foes of Spider-Man, right?
I'm not. I would, but I just haven't picked it up.
Yeah. So that series is all about Spider-Man's, like, D-list villains. So it's Demon. Yeah, Speed Demon, Shocker, Boomerang, the New Beetle. I know I'm Overdrive. I think that's everyone. Who are calling themselves the Sinister Six, even though there's five of them. And Shocker's one of them.
Yeah.
And Shocker's one of the characters. And, like, throughout that series, all of them are shown as fuck-ups, like, massive fuck-ups. And it's hilarious to watch. And the fact that that series has portrayed him that way in this comic, you get the exact same portrayal that and kind of helped it out a ton. Because I read the other one. So,
I'm sorry, you're breaking up a little bit. You're breaking up a bit. Can you say it again?
So I read Superior Foes, so seeing Shocker's portrayal being consistent. Marvel's not always consistent with character portrayals. I thought it was solid, like, really, really good. But overall, like,
I remember it being written that way back in the 90s, even though, like, you know, they've really, like, that's his personality.
I'm not a huge Spider-Man fan, so I don't know tons of the character. Like, my real dive into him is probably Superior Foes and maybe, like, a couple spots here and there. But, you know, an issue, he's just, like, a beat-up villain on, like, a one-off thing. You don't get a good feel for him. So this, I thought, was really, really good. He's fun.
Yeah. And I've just been really enjoying this run. I really hope that this brings more attention to She-Hulk, because she's a character that I love, a character a lot of us love. And she really taps into, like, people love golf shows, you know, they love the escapades of lawyers, and she has got a good sense of humor. She comes off really human, really funny, someone you'd want to hang out with, you know? And I really think that, like, this is a comic that they should be pushing more broadly to the media, and I don't know how the sales have been, I actually don't know, but I'm hoping that it's people pay attention to it. I don't see a ton of buzz around it on Twitter, incidentally. Not none, but not like a ton.
Yeah. But I think this is a series, this is the type of series you could do a television show for. Easily.
Oh my God, well yeah. No, like Alyssa Rosenberg has been writing the, like, you know, the Ally McBeal, basically, for She-Hulk. Like, yes, that has to happen on television. Has to.
Yeah. I mean, the only issue I could see is the fact that she's green all the time. And, like, all muscle and huge, so I'd imagine the FX budget would be a little weird, or makeup budget.
That's easy. You can just color key that.
But totally, like, it's a great series. I can't recommend it enough. I think it's a fantastic mix of superhero-dom and, like, normal, everyday, trying to, like, do a job.
Yes.
I can't praise it enough. So onto that, from another would be Ms. Marvel, a new character who is up to the fourth issue, I think. So Ms. Marvel, not to be confused with Carol Danvers' Captain Marvel, who used to be Ms. Marvel. This Ms. Marvel is teenage girl who is part of this whole inhuman people getting powers, finding out they're inhumans, not knowing it. Her powers to, I guess, change her body size. I don't know.
Shapeshift.
She's a teenage girl. She's from Jersey, and she's Muslim. Four issues in.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Like, we finally get her in her, like, official costume. She's been dealing with her powers. I can't recommend it enough. Like, it's another one that's blown me away. I didn't know what to go in expecting it. This latest issue really has her finally, like, accepting that she's a hero and out what to do, as she kind of brings in more people into her secret. The way I can describe it is the early days of Spider-Man when he was a teenager, except with a Muslim teenage girl.
In Jersey City, which is like really the same
thing.
It's really an equivalent, you know? Like Forest Hills Queens of yesteryear is totally Jersey City of today. Like, it really is. So that's just even more perfect. The comic is really charming, and it's been one of the comics, actually, that I always see my husband pick up from my stack of comics. You know, he doesn't read everything that I get because I read a lot of comics. But this has been one that he keeps reading, and he says that he just feels really emotionally invested in it. I was asking him, like, why this one particularly. He just feels, like, really emotionally invested in the story. I love the characters in it. I love the unique visual characterization of her. She doesn't have the same face. None of the characters have the same faces as each other. She's got a very emotive face. I love when she's rummaging through her closet for what she calls her quote-unquote bikini from the Modest Girls swimsuit line that she's going to, of course, use in turn into her superhero costume, because that actually is what a catsuit is good for, superhero costumes. I kind of knew from last month's cliffhanger that something like this would happen. I'm actually not surprised at the direction things are in right now. That's fine. You know, this is a superhero origin story, and there's marks that have to be hit, and they're doing it well. And it's really charming.
About her costume, like, I love her costume. I love
the
design.
Her self-made costume,
like,
with the hip pack,
yeah.
With, like, the fanny pack? Oh, my God, yes.
And then what it looks like it's going to turn into with, like, the S, like, bolt-ish design. And on the front, and
yeah,
I love it. Like, it's a realistic outfit. Like, it's not too revealing. It's not obnoxious. Like, it's, you know, she's wearing tights, kind of a dress-ish
thing. Like a tunic-y thing.
Yeah. Like, it makes sense. It's a costume that actually makes sense.
Yes. And that a teenager could put together from pieces of things that she would find.
Yeah, and you know what?
I think
the nice thing about it is for the first three issues, there's this ongoing joke about the real Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers' old costume, how it isn't very realistic and not conducive to crime. So going through, like, through that to this, like, that evolution, I think has been fantastic throughout the series.
Mm-hmm. And this is the issue where she finally claims her title, that she's the new Ms. Marvel. And
yeah.
I thought they did that really well. It felt really natural. Like, you know, it kind of was also something that, like, it had to be, right? But I thought it was done really well. I also just want to shout out to Jimmy McKelvey, who's one of my favorite artists around today. As you probably know, he did the cover for this issue, and it's a great diner scene. He always does these diner scenes. Like, I don't know if it's because he's, like, British and it's a novelty or something. I don't know, but he does these great drawings of people eating food at a diner, and we are treated to another one of them, and we see Kamala Khan's family eating at a diner and witnessing this newly minted superhero flying by. It's a great cover. It's a really great cover.
It's also that, like, everyone I know from Jersey has this thing about diners.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Jersey is
like Diner Central. I mean, Jersey is Diner Central. It's like the most diner place in the world.
Right. So, I mean, like, it completely fits that, the fact that she is in Jersey. And, yeah, I mean, like, it's just, it's great. Like, I can't praise the series enough. Like, DC, if you're looking at what to do, do this.
And, you know, it helps that the writer is a woman, like a young woman who's been following and paying attention to these things and is also writing about communities that she spent a lot of time in herself as well. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, what a shock that someone writing about community, people, religion, whatever, you know, of her, that she has experienced those things, is doing it really well. Like, crazy that someone's perspective would be translated well in writing. Like, their own experiences coming off in their writing. Like, what a shock on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Solid. It's a solid series. And everyone, the three that we're going to discuss right now, the Captain Marvel, She-Hulk, or Captain Marvel, Ms. Marvel, and She-Hulk, is only a, only a few issues in. You're not too late. Great time to pick them up if you haven't. Their trades are probably going to be out fairly soon. So, you know, it's not too late. It's, I think all of them are well worth checking out. So on to the next would be Captain Marvel, which has been a much different change, different experience from the previous volume of Captain Marvel. This Captain Marvel, not to be confused with Ms. Marvel, Captain Marvel is the previous Ms. Marvel. Carol Danvers, who is infused with all kinds of cool Kree powers that she got from the original Captain Marvel, she has been dispatched space with as part of the Avengers kind of branching out to take on bigger stuff. So right now she is flying through space dealing with a humanitarian crisis.
99 problems.
Right. Yeah.
She's dealing with like a lot of stuff all the time. All the time.
99 problems. That. Say 99 problems, yeah. And a cat isn't one.
Is it one of them? It's true because she has her cat back. That's good. She got her cat back. Now all she needs is she has her truck back, too. She has her spaceship back. So she's like the reverse of a country song. That's good. Okay, good for her. She doesn't have her Jim Rhodes back, though. That'll be in a future issue.
No, but she's got a new flirting interest in Star-Lord.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I don't know about that.
Well,
I really keep hoping that they keep playing up on this stuff between her and Guardians, because that is how we're going to finally get Ms. Marvel into the movie, I guess.
I think so. I mean, you know, for a movie, there's a lot you got to do. I mean, unless you dramatically change her origin or do some flips on it, like, you have to have Mar-Vell and you have to introduce the Kree.
Nah, not really. It's so,
who is the Kree?
Her origin story is so, like, to me, like, not even really that important. Like, she could just be another science experiment person. It doesn't even matter. You know, the origin part of her story that matters is that she's a pilot. She's military.
Yeah.
And she's really competitive. Like, I think that's the part of origin story. That's her personality. It's not her origin story to me. I think that matters that much. It could just be, like, they found an alien device and she got powers from the alien device. Like, I don't think it really matters.
Well, I think you at least got to do the Kree. I can agree, like, you can not do Mar-Vell and have you know, an alien device or something of that nature, like, during some attack at some point with the Kree or whatever, and she just gets blasted with the ray and has her powers. But at least you got to do the Kree part.
Why?
To me, that's, like, it's part of the character, that it ties her into the galactic world a bit more, at least in the comics. At times it has been brought up where, like, you know, she's infused with this creeper, which kind of puts her in an odd place with the Kree. You know, obviously stuff that they can't really deal with in a movie, but the comic wise, I think it's pretty important to her.
Okay.
I mean, movies, you could definitely change it, but I don't know. I kind of like it. I dig it. It's not vital. I'm not going to go to boards and cry and flip out if they were to change it. Like, probably a good chunk of people.
Yeah, a lot of people will. I don't care about that. I want to preserve her personality.
Yeah, that to me is the key. Like, her being a pilot and this, you know, kick-ass pilot on top of it is, I think, top, like, number one thing.
Yeah.
I want to see her go, like, toe-to-toe with Jim Rhodes in an Iron Man film. Like, both of them just kind of, like, being somewhat cocky, or just even with Tony Stark, like, being somewhat cocky flying around, I think it'd be cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the comic, so what do you think of the new setting, the kind of the new vibe to it?
Kind of like, I like it, I don't love it, you know? But I feel like we're about to come on something big right now. Like, I feel like there's about, they definitely introduced her to like a whole new supporting cast this last issue. The supporting cast is fun, but it's kind of trying a bit hard, but that's okay. I find being, like, it's interesting, like, the diversity of the aliens that she's dealing with, who are all part of this exiled population. So they're all refugees together because they're not just, they're different species, you know? They're all different species, and I think you get interesting little hints of the cultures and the cultural differences between them, which is good to see.
Yeah,
I found the story a little bit confusing at first, but I think I'm understanding it better now.
How did you think it was deceiving?
No, not deceiving, confusing. It was a little bit
confusing.
At first.
I'm sorry.
And figuring out who was aligned with who and where and how, or like why people were angry at other people. Am I supposed to be reading another Avengers book or something? Am I missing something? Like, I knew about the Builders, kind of, but.
Yeah, well, so that's the thing. Like, I read the event. That's part of the Infinity event that happened, whatever, last year's event.
Mm-hmm.
One of God knows how many events last year.
So
the story was basically, like, there's these things called the Builders. It's still kind of confusing as to exactly what the hell their job is in the world, in the universe. But they basically were hinted at that they were a good reason of why a lot of these civilizations exist, and that they weren't happy with their where things were going, so they basically decided to start, like, plowing through and just killing everyone, erasing their work. So, like, worlds were getting destroyed, and the Avengers had to team up with the Shi'ar and Kree and the Skrulls, like, basically all, and the Spartans, and all these alien characters and worlds to kind of, like, take on the Builders. And it was a pretty cool galactic story. Like, it tried to be old school, like, Infinity Gauntlet and those sort of stories, and it came really close. It missed beats here and there, but overall, like, a decent story to read. That's the thing, like, if you didn't read that, the story's not going to probably impact you as much, or the series isn't going to be quite as good, because what's interesting is it is, and the part of the reason I do like it, or liking it more, is that it is playing off of the result of that event, and that she is basically dealing with the fallout of, like, these battles and this war, and it's not something you could generally see, like, hey, the Avengers fight Dr. Doom and buildings are destroyed in New York City and, you know, next issue everything's fine. Like, maybe you see a little construction, but it's not really dealt with a whole lot. But in this case, they are really playing off of kind of, like, the bigger picture of that event, which I dig. Like, props to them that they're kind of keeping that going, but I can see if you didn't read that event, it wouldn't be as good, or could be confusing. Would be confusing.
Mm. You know, and she exists in this space opera world, so it doesn't. Of course, it's going to have, you know, big ties to that. That makes sense. I'm just saying it took me a little bit to get into for that reason, but I roll with it. Whatever. I'm interested in the woman who is the leader of the people that are the refugees. I think she's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Her reaction to the King of Spartax?
Yeah, not just, well, yeah, that too. But since we've begun meeting her, she's been very interesting. and especially interesting in this issue. It's interesting to see this person who's a politician, basically, and trying, not that she would call herself that, but that's how she's acting in this world. She has, that's like the role she's been placed in as someone who's trying to be a leader. And I think that she's really interesting. You know, there's no easy solutions for her, and she's really wielding and working with politics in a complicated way.
That's kind of an interesting thing with the Infinity. Was part of the story was Spartax, who, I mean, they kind of touched on it a little bit in the latest issue, is he basically, you know, the world builders were coming for his people, and he cut a deal with them, was like, hey, no, kill these people instead and leave us alone. And the world builders like, okay. So the guy's like an asshole and is a politician himself. So seeing it out has been good. Some of the series they've touched upon it, Guardians of the Galaxy, it's come up, you know, a little bit here and there. I think Avengers, it might have been touched on a little bit. Uncanny X-Men All New X-Men when it crossed over with Guardians of the Galaxy, it kind of touched upon. So seeing that like intergalactic chess game, I think is interesting. I enjoy it. So seeing it play out in here is fun. Like, I really wish people would dive into more of that aspect of everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Yeah,
like,
this is a part of the comic world for it. So.
Yeah, and I to me the big thing will be once this storyline is done, where she goes from there. Like, once it gets past the Infinity stuff, you know, what's the next step for the series and how easy will it be to get into for new people? Like, to me, that's the key. So we'll see. I liked it. Like, it's not as good, I think, as the previous volume, but it's still a good series.
But you know what I think is interesting is that this is such a divergence from the earlier Captain Marvel book that I think it has to be deliberate. I think that she's trying to sort of show, she meaning the writer Kelly Sue DeConnick, who I think the world of, I think she's trying to show the diversity and the kinds of stories that you can tell around the same female character and around female characters in general. Like, I think she's actually making a point. You know, you can do space opera, you can do more of a traditional superhero story, you know, you can have romance. I think she's trying to demonstrate these different things, like to make a point about it. And I think that's great because in there somewhere, there's going to be something for everyone, and that's important.
Well, think about like the last volume that she did. So the Captain Marvel volume two, maybe three, whatever. Previous volume started off with her Captain Time, which is a whole different story, and it used a lot of history and real history. And then from there, she came back to this mystery of Deathbird and character trying to kill her and dealing with some of her past with that. And then that wound up going into a crossover with the Avengers, which was very, like, superhero-ish. Like, even in that volume, the types of stories she was telling were very different between, like, the first half of the series and the latter half of the series.
Yeah. But you think that I might be onto something, that she's actually trying to do an experiment in genre, really, to, like, make a point about how you can have these different kinds of narrative diversity for female characters, and having a female protagonist doesn't mean any one particular thing. It could mean any number of things.
I think it's a valid thing. Like, I don't know if she's purposely doing it, but it's definitely fascinating. I think we should tweet her. What the hell is her Twitter name?
I know. it's like really obvious. I think it's like Kelly Sue or something like that.
I think it's something like that too. Yep, there we go. Kelly Sue. It's always the easy ones.
Nice.
It is at Kelly Sue purposely. How would you say it? Purposely playing with genres?
I'm writing in a different.
Okay, you write it, and then I can
retweet
it.
Thank you. Of, Sorry, let me finish. I shouldn't be letting people on the show. I'm terrible. There's like people who are listening to this are going to be like, oh, my God, did you seriously stop talking so you could tweet something?
It's not
That's
easy.
That's completely rude. It's rude. It's rude. I don't want to be rude to our listeners.
Okay,
and I want to thank the listeners. Okay.
You type. I will talk about something else.
Okay.
Okay, there we go. We're going to, when we're back, we're going to talk a new series about called Wicked and Divine. It's a new comic that's out this Wednesday from Image. But before that, I wanted to point out since we like to point out positive things folks are doing in the comic industry, this Wednesday sees the release of Archie Comics number 656. And I know what you're saying. What the hell are you guys talking about Archie Comics? Archie has a new character. You'll see it right on the cover. It had some news coverage of it. Is a new character named Harper who happens to be disabled. It might be the first character who's been disabled ever in the Archie universe, whose comics are probably quickly becoming one of the most progressive comics out there. Kind of amazing. Archie Comics, I'm just going to read the press release that we got. I have the comic sitting in front of me. I've had it for a week. Archie Comics is proud to give fans a first look at the latest addition to the Riverdale family, a spunky fashionista, Harper, who happens to be disabled. Cousin DuPosh socialite Veronica Lodge, Harper arrives in Riverdale and introduces the Archie gang to something they've never dealt with, a friend who is disabled. But while Harper does have a disability, it does not define her. I think that's kind of key. And Archie, his friends, and fans around the world will be treated to her dynamic personality. Harper teaches the Archies? Okay. An important lesson. Archies is plural? How about the Archie gang? All right, whatever. An important lesson that's something you can think you can hold you back. The lesson is that something you think can hold you back can make you that much stronger. The idea actually came from a conversation between writer artist Dan Parent, who is writing this issue and quite a few of Archie's comics, and longtime Archie fan and author Jill Cates, who is also disabled. And from that, Harper was born. So it's out this Wednesday. Archie Comics 656, one debut of a new character. Archie has been kind of actually had decent buzz because of this stuff. Kevin Keller was the first gay character in Archie Comics. They got a hell of a lot of buzz. People wanted that issue, so run out, go get this issue just as a collector thing. But two, it's a good thing to support. We want diversity. Unlike other companies that took their character in a wheelchair and gave her walking ability again, this one actually has a diverse cast and introducing someone that's new. So kudos to Archie. We actually have an interview out to Dan Parent that I'm waiting to get back. So mad props to Archie, who has been trying new things and willing to diversify their line. If anyone else doesn't believe me, check out Afterlife with Archie. It's zombies and Archie, and I know that sounds weird, but it is fucking awesome. Can't rave about it enough. If you're into zombies and watching, part of it is that it's Archie and it's really messed up. It's good and it's realistic, and I kind of want to see Archie next do like a realistic Archie comic dealing with actual real world issues with the real Archie characters. I will praise these folks if they do this. I will buy every issue of that because that would be amazing. If our Afterlife with Archie is any indication. Yeah. Okay. I ranted.
Also I thought was interesting was the fact that she, that the new character who's African-American is cousins with Veronica, which people have diverse families. So I thought that was a nice touch too.
Yeah. Now that we were going to talk about Archie, but it's worth talking about. So Afterlife with Archie, it has zombies and stuff like that, but, and I don't know the Archie characters really well, but there's, Ginger, and there was another girl, and I can't think of her name, but they're, hiding the fact that they're lesbians from everyone, so that, one is dating the jock guy and clearly, hiding the fact that she is into girls, probably more so than him. There's that, and then, and it really stuck out at me, I think the fifth issue or fourth issue of the series is Kevin Keller walks in to talk to, I'm going to totally forget who the character is, but the character, like, snaps at him in a homophobic way. And, like, you know, I actually think that's to see. Like, it was really, really great to see, like, that diverse attitude and, like, a very natural reaction, and to see how Kevin dealt with it and, like, that interaction. To me, like, it's realistic. It's stuff you would see in the real world. It was written really well. And the fact that it's coming from, like, an Archie comic of all things, like, blows my mind. I can't praise Afterlife with Archie enough. Like, that, it every issue surprises me in some way. The art is amazing. Francesco Francavilla, who's one of my favorite artists. And then the writer Roberto Aguirre, I'm going to totally butcher his last name. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm horrible with names. But that the series is fantastic, and they're doing a Sabrina that's going to be like in a mature adult take as well. I can't wait to see what they do with that. So it's like solid comic, realistic. Well, you know, as realistic as a zombie comic can get. But Archie.
No, I've been meaning to read it. It does. It sounds really good. I've been meaning to read it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll if you don't
oh,
if
we
you
got
can't
our
find
answer.
It.
We got our answer from Kelly
really?
The comic. She says I should say yes and look more clever than I am. I've been thinking about this for a while, you know. So I think it's in there.
You should tell her back that we're just going to claim that this is fact, and knowing the comics media will get picked up as fact.
Okay. I'm
trying to think of some, like, bullshit tweet to throw up there and be like, wow, you know, at Kelly Sue is brilliant using, purposely doing so many different genres in Captain Marvel.
I'm doing it.
All right.
I'm doing it. I claimed it for us. Yeah. I said, Graphic Policy Radio is claiming this as fact now. We are a trusted news source, so our word is law.
Awesome.
Okay.
Thank
you to our listeners. I know I wanted to come on the show so much. I've asked her before. I'll ask her some more. But yeah,
she'd be fun to talk to. I think that would be a good one. So yeah, the sweet. Nice. We never did hear it last time. I forgot who we were harassing. In our previous episode,
I actually was also harassing some of the folks working on Elektra because I'm obsessed with Elektra. So.
Yeah. I think they did respond though, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They were like really prompt in responding. Yeah.
Brubaker never responded.
I do like a typical me thing and like start rambling about art to the writer. Like I'm like, oh right, sorry, wrong. Anyway, sure. No, they were good. They were good.
All right, so we got our harassing a creator done for this episode. So to wrap up, the final topic that we wanted to talk about, someone who's writing that we've liked, The Wicked, and is it The Wicked plus The Divine or The Wicked and
Wicked
The Divine?
Wicked plus The Divine.
Okay,
I don't know.
This
topic isn't even out yet, so I don't want to go too much into spoilers or anything. We read it in advance.
Yeah.
We're here to tell you as experts, and it's amazing, but we can't tell you too much.
Yeah, so I'll read at least the teaser that Image has put out. The series, one, I'm making it our pick of the week when that goes live, not to spoil our post at noon tomorrow, but Wicked and Divine, number one, is the top pick. I loved it. You loved it. Like, we rule everyone on the site. So we're going with the Wicked and Divine as the top pick. The story is, every 90 years, 12 gods incarnate as humans. They are loved, they are hated. In 2 years, they are dead. The team behind critically thermonuclear fillers, Young Avengers, and Phonogram reunite to start a new ongoing superhero fantasy with a beautiful, oversized issue. Welcome to the Wicked plus the Divine, where gods are ultimate pop stars. But remember, just because you're immortal doesn't mean you're going to live forever. Writer is it Kieran Gillen?
Yep.
Okay. Arts by Jamie McKelvey. Colored by Matt. I throw Matt Wilson on there for colors because I thought the covers were fantastic. And for those who are Scott Pilgrim fans, there is a variant cover by Brian Lee O'Malley, if you can find it.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. Great
I
comic.
I can see that.
Yeah, great comic. I really dug it. Solid debut. Like, I don't want to spoil it for everyone because it's not quite what I expected. But, like, really freaking good. Really good.
Yeah, I mean, I know that a lot of people were expecting Phonogram to come. I thought the next book they'd be putting out would be the new Phonogram book, and that's still on its way. But I really do think this will scratch the itch for some people, and I think it's outstanding. I think that this has potential to be, like, a really big crossover hit. I think this will appeal to anybody who's interested in pop music. And I think it has a real Sandman, like OG Sandman, not like the current revamp, which I do like, but feels very different to me. I think people who like Sandman will like this comic a lot. And I also think people who like Saga will like this comic a lot. I think this could be a next really big breakaway hit. I'm expecting huge things for Wicked Plus Divine.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. Like, it had a very much a Sandman sort of vibe, like that Vertigo sort of feel to it.
Yeah.
You know, the issue kind of starts off one way, and then by the end, it's actually having a fairly interesting philosophical debate. So, like, I really liked it. Like, I want to read the next one right away. Because it was that good. And it's hard, like, I want to talk about it, but I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah. So everybody, you have homework. You got to go pick up this book when it comes out on Wednesday.
Then we can spoil it next week.
It's a beautiful book, but you want to own it anyway. So.
Yes. It's an Image number one, people. That alone you should be buying. But yeah, I expect it to sell out. I'm fully expecting it to sell out.
Yeah, it will. I think people need to get that on their pull list.
So I haven't read the Phonogram. Like, is it good?
Oh my God, it's so good.
Okay.
It's definitely one of the, it's for me. I don't know how someone who isn't a huge music geek would feel about it. I don't know if you are, actually. But as a huge obsessive crazy music geek, it's like, it's huge. Anyone who's a music lover will love this comic. I give it to all of my big music geek friends to borrow.
Okay. I can see that. I will have to go check it out. Like, the thing that piqued my interest was reading the back pages. Kieran has, like, a... you know, his whatever writing on it.
His letter, yeah.
Yeah, his letter. And he brings up Phonogram a lot. And I was like, I've heard good things about it, but it's not one I've actually, like, really ever read. So I think I might have to check it out. Or I will check it out.
Yeah, it's very unique. It's an amazing concept. I can't believe no one else did it first. And it also is a great education in British pop, like, British... like Britwave, you know, stuff, and I think that a lot of Americans don't really know as much about. So it serves educational purposes as well as entertainment purposes.
Do you have to know that? And they're really feminist too. Like, do you have to know, like, the Brit music aspect of it, or just music in general?
No, he explains it to you. It's not that you don't have to know anything at all. Like, they actually have an excellent, like, information about all the Britpop bands. There's, like, a glossary and, like, all this other stuff is in the back if you want it, which you don't need. It helps, but you don't need. And I'm not particularly literate about Britpop. I know more than the next guy, but I didn't, like, live and breathe on the stuff or anything. But I think you just have to have a really strong emotional connection with music to appreciate it. It doesn't have to be that music. It can be any music.
Okay. Is it, like, you got a good vibe out of?
Probably not like top 40s music, but any sort of subcultural music of any kind. I think if that resonates for you, I think it'll mean something to you as a reader. And it actually is also a good place to start learning about, like, Manic Street Preachers and other bands that you may not know from that era. So, although I don't like the way the comic portrays Kinks fans. I'm not going to get all up on that now. I'm just going to say that as a Kinks fan, I wasn't crazy about the portrayal of Kinks fans.
Do I dare
even
ask?
If we are,
or do
even
I just...
if we are pretty much universally backwards-looking people, so. What do you mean? It's only a band that's older than we are.
Do I want to know the Kinks fan thing, or do I just should I just read it?
Read the comics. Read the comics. Read the comics.
Okay.
Read the comics. But also, you know, there's two books already, so. Books go to the store to pick up. We have books online. You can also pick up Phonogram and the second trade paperback, which is called Singles Collection, and enjoy those because they're amazing.
Okay. I'll have to check it out. Like, you know, hopefully we got a review copy. If not, I will dive into my pockets and go pick up a copy. Because I've heard nothing but good things, so clearly it's worth checking out. But yeah, we'll talk next week and we can actually spoil it and go into a much deeper conversation because I still want to discuss the ramifications of that second half.
Yes.
The philosophical part of it just gets really fascinating and I want to talk to somebody about it.
Yes, I agree. We'll be here for that. That's what our show is for, guys, having those conversations.
Yeah. All right, you got a lot of recommendations coming off this episode, stuff you should be going checking out. Everything, even The Wicked and the Vine, is a whole bunch of women in it.
Yes, that is true. Actually, I think all the characters are... I think all of the characters are women so far, so...
Yeah, like I was thinking about it as the show was starting up, being like, no, I think that's the case. So interesting. We'll see. It should be. I'm looking forward to it, especially the fact that it's an ongoing. Like it seems like a limited series, so it being ongoing is fascinating to me.
I didn't know that. That's really impressive.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, anything else we want to cover? I think that. It's a good amount.
No, it's good for me.
Cool. So everyone has the reading list for the week. We're actually telling you to go out and get an Archie comic because it's a good thing and support it. But definitely both of us are saying The Wicked plus The Divine, number one, this Wednesday, Image Comics, and then go get back issues of Captain Marvel, Ms. Marvel, and She-Hulk. So with that, that's another episode of Graphic Policy Radio. As always, you can catch us every single day at graphicpolicy.com, on Twitter, on Facebook, everywhere at Graphic Policy. We keep it consistent. Until next time, I am Brett.
And I'm Ilana.
Keep on reading and have a geeky week.